Hello, everyone. Welcome to Keys to the City podcast. This is Marquise. This is episode number one. And today I get to interview my incredible mother-in-law and talk about her recovery ministry that she began almost 7 years ago. Please take a listen and hope you have a great time enjoying the podcast. Thanks. Hello. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Marquise.
So, I'm excited. I get to interview you today. I really have wanted to interview you for a long time, but I didn't have a podcast. I didn't think about a podcast. And this is exciting because I feel like you honestly do a lot of things that I really admire with all the ministries that you're involved in, being involved in the city. And I really admire that. So I think this is a great time to interview you and like let other people know who may not know you personally or haven't experienced your ministries to kind of get a sense of what you're involved in. So my first question for you, actually just tell us a little bit about yourself before we jump into like the other questions. Like, you know, who are you and where do you live and what are some things that you're involved in?
Well, my name is Anna Javier and thank you for giving me this opportunity to be here with you today. So it's a pleasure for me to be here in this new podcast you have started. What is it? Key to the City?
Keys to the City, yeah.
Keys to the City, right? And it doesn't matter what city.
Amen.
The important thing is that we get a key. We get a way in to doing what God has called us out to do, right?
Amen to that.
So I do live in the city of Lawrence and... Mm-hmm. I have different hats in the city. I've always said that. And I just find it something natural, something very important for us to be involved in what happens, not only inside our churches, but also what happens outside in our communities.
Amen. Amen. So I guess my first question for you is, so you and a friend of yours started a great recovery ministry about 7 years ago almost, called Time for Change. In the city of Lawrence that you just mentioned. Can you tell us a little bit about the mission of Time for Change? What are you guys doing? What do you hope to achieve?
Well, our main goal is to give support to the people that are in recovery, but also to be able to empower their family members and give them the right tools so that they can better understand what recovery is really all about. Because many times it's very difficult for the family member to understand what their loved ones are going through because they've never been through it.
Yeah.
And many times out there, we find that a lot of people that are in recovery or need recovery, we have a bunch of different resources out there in the community where people will try to get them into detox, try to get them into AA, NA, different type of groups, but there's no help out there really for the family. And if recovery doesn't happen as a whole, as a family, then recovery doesn't really happen.
Wow.
So we did, the co-founder of the group is Frank Campos, and him and I actually had a conversation almost 7 years ago, and March is going to be 7 years.
That's awesome.
7th anniversary. Him and I had a conversation of something that I was feeling in my heart, and it was to start the support group. And I knew Frank Campos from back in 1995. I had met him. He was actually a person in recovery back then. And I saw how he had changed his life and the stuff that he was doing for a job and for the community was huge. Therefore, I reached out to him and I asked him if he would be willing to start this group with me, knowing that he comes from the world of, you know, he's had the experience of a person in recovery.
Wow.
And I was the other side to the coin because as a family member, I was also affected by the usage of substance.
Wow.
So, you know, this is when we thought about starting this. And we started, I'm doing the support group, and it was based on actually like a personal experience, I would say also, because I have a brother. I actually lost a brother, Marquise, about 21 years ago due to alcohol. And he was found drowned in one of the rivers in our city, in Lawrence. And 10 years after that, I was looking at my brother, my other brother, and he was going down that path. Himself, he was drinking a lot and I all I can think of was I'm going to lose him too. So I was praying as a Christian person. I was praying.
Yeah.
I was doing all that I can. I was crying. I was devastated. I was many times I wanted to push him into treatment, push him into getting help. But this was something that I discovered later on, that you cannot take a person into treatment or you cannot get them any help unless they really want the help.
Right.
So the time came when I was literally begging my brother to go to a rehab program, and he wouldn't allow me to take him. But one day my prayers were answered, and he actually reached out to me and he said, the program that you want to take me, I'm willing to go. I know I need it.
Wow.
So this is when I took him into the recovery. Was a Christian rehab center in Worcester. And he came out of there a year and 3 months later. And after he came back, I continued giving him support. And I was always like on the lookout so that he wouldn't have a relapse. Because I had learned that relapses can be worse than the actual, first time around. So I was always cautious in terms of what asking him, what are you doing? Where are you? Just making sure he was doing the right things. And one day I was just questioning myself and saying, well, I'm always after my brother, but who's after these other people that come out of treatment? Who gives them support when they come out of detox? Who gives these people support when they come out of rehab centers? Who gives them support, you know, when they want to reach out for help? And, you know, this is how the idea came up. And I reached out to Frank Campos and asked him to be, you know, the co-founder of this group.
That's awesome. I don't think I knew half of that. So, like, for me, that's really inspiring. And I love what you said about, like, you know, thinking about, like, you were trying to stay after your brother and look out for him and, you know, just make sure that he was supported and, you know, trying to avoid the relapses. But who else is looking out for the other people who might be going through the same exact thing? And that, like, That's a really big question, because, like, in cities like yours, the city that we live in, Lynn, in, like, a lot of big urban areas, but even in, like, rural areas where there are people who are dealing with, like, addictions and, you know, any kind of addictions, like, they need support, too. They need people to stand in the gap and say, I'm going to be there for you. It may not be easy. It won't be easy. But, like, I want to make sure that you get the support that you need to become restored back to who you were called to be by God. So that's awesome. I really do love that. So I guess my next question is, like, what do you do typically from week to week in your group, in your ministry, to offer support to people who do come to Time for Change?
So they'll come, we meet on a weekly basis every Thursday at 7 o'clock. And we typically say from 7 to 8:30, but we end up staying close to 9. We, you know, people go to the group, we'll have a prayer, a moment of prayer, and then we'll do introduction, and we have a topic every week, a different topic that we speak about. And then we just go around the circle and kind of support each other. A lot of times we can have people that are in recovery. And then other times we have, well, on the other side of the circle, you can see family members. And it might not be the same family members that are of the people that are in that recovery circle. It might be something else. So I've had many experiences in the circle where sometimes a family member will say, what that young man said touches my life, and it reminds me of what I'm going through because of my son. So a lot of times I'll see a mom that'll break down in tears and start crying. But it's just because another individual had spoke. And same thing, vice versa. They'll learn from each other. And I think this is the beauty of it. This is, you know, the difference that we learn from each other. Family member will learn from the person that's in recovery. We'll get to know what they're feeling, what they're going through, what their struggles are, so that we can deal with that. But also they get to know what we go through as a family member. Because to me, going through this was really, really difficult. And I didn't realize how hard it can be, how much of a burden it can be on a family member. Until I actually went through it. But also my brother, like, after he went to recovery, and after him being sober, he was always just asking me for forgiveness and saying, I know I put you through so much pain, and I want you to forgive me. So he actually knew after, but this was after he was sober, of course. that this does cause damage, cause pain to the family member as well.
Wow.
So
I love that you guys, I think one of my favorite things about your ministry is that it's not just to the individual who is dealing with the addiction, but also the family members and the friends of the people who want to support them. I think that's a really understated need, dealing with this population of people, because helping those people also get healing, even though they may not be the ones dealing with the addiction, they're all impacted in some way, shape, or form, and they need healing sometimes just as much as people going through the actual addiction. I know with my dad, when I was growing up, he was, you know, addicted to drugs and alcohol, and it took a toll on our family. And, you know, we didn't really know how to deal with it. We just kind of took it day by day and things like that. But we would have really benefited from a group like yours, just hearing other people's stories and listening to how they get through it. Like, that offers healing to people, and people need that. I feel like it would really motivate you to continue to push, even though you know things may not be perfect, you know, next week, but it motivates you to continue to be like, I'm still gonna try to support them as best as I can, even though I know that, like, it has hurt me too.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah, I think by going to these meetings, people get to understand, and like, we try to teach people that addiction is actually not something that you want. It's actually a disease, and it can be a disease of the mental health, and it should be treated as such. So, and we all understand, like, this is a big debate that people have, whereas, okay, how is it a disease when people choose to start using drugs?
Wow.
Well, at the beginning, people do, sometimes they do start because of peer, it could be peer pressure.
Hmm.
It can be just because they're going through depression, to going through sad times in their lives, or they just want to try something new.
Yeah.
But this is at the beginning. Now, when addiction takes control of you, takes control of your mind, of your mental health status, then it becomes a disease. So once this is a disease, it's like, we have to treat it as such.
Wow.
And for family members, it's very difficult to do, especially in, like, in our culture. In my culture, for instance, we just think people want to be like that. That person gets drunk, like my dad used to say, your brother gets drunk because he wants to be like that. I never taught him how to be like that. He's just no good. And, you know, people start calling them all sorts of names, and all sorts of stigmas, you know. So, and this makes it worse, and they keep going deeper and deeper into their addiction.
I think, you know, many people don't realize that it, like, when we say the word disease, all they think of is, like, things that you can contract, like an infection or something like that. But the fact that you did say it, like, takes over you, like, mentally and physically, like, that is something entirely different than just, like, a choice at that point. It becomes, like, what you think you need to survive. And that is, I could never understand that. So I think it is helpful for people, especially the family members who are supporting people, to recognize that and to be able to accept that, so that they have more of a desire to see that person get treated and not just be like, stop doing that. Because it's not, at that point, you can't just stop doing it. That's a really, like,
there comes some time when you just lose control.
Yeah.
And you cannot stop. You cannot do what your family's asking you to do, as much as you want to do it. I know people that cry and they say, I don't want to be like this. I really don't want to use this, you know? And they tell me how they started. You never really get to know what a person has gone through until you hear their stories, actually. So, hearing the stories also helps other people in the circle.
Yeah.
Because many times they're dealing with the family members, and when the other person speaks, and a person that's been sober, let's say, for five, because we have people that have been sober for many years, 5, 8, 10 years, 12
wow.
years.
Wow.
When they hear from someone that's been sober for 5 years and they say, this is what I used to do, and I used to steal from my mom, and I used to steal from my neighbors, because violent issues that we have going on, these people stealing cars, people stealing from the homes, and invasion, all this other stuff, it's all related. I think that everything is really very well connected.
Yeah.
And so when we have someone that comes to the circle and says, you know, I used to do all these bad things to my parents, and I used to hang around with the wrong crowd, but you know what? 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, I decided to change my life. And I went to a rehab program, and I've continued coming to groups, and I continue to do good for society. Hmm. And now I have a job, and now I own a house, and that's awesome. Now I have a family. And when they come and say that, this gives the other person hope.
Hmm.
It gives the mom, the dad that's in the circle, the wife, or the husband that's suffering with his wife, because we have it in all ways.
Hmm.
So that gives the other family members hope that there can be changes, and these things can happen. This disease can actually, it's not cured completely, but you know what? It can get better.
That's amazing. I really do love that. And I think, you know, having sat in on some of the events that you guys have, especially like your annual anniversary dinner, like I have seen that people do gain help, like hope in your program. Like that is one of the, like hope is a powerful thing. And if you can have hope, then you can really take your daily steps in the right direction. You might fall from time to time, and there might be relapse, but you have something that's anchoring you that makes you believe that one day you will overcome this. And that's huge. And I think, you know, like I didn't have this written down as like a question, but I think a lot of that comes from the fact, I would say all of it, if you think about it, comes from the fact that God is at the center of your ministry. And how do you think that spiritual component like really affects people when they're dealing with addiction?
Well, and this is important that you mentioned that because, like, I run the group, it's out of my church.
Mm-hmm.
And we have actually gone out to the community now.
Hmm.
So I go to a program during the week. Every Wednesday, I go to a day program, which is called New Beginnings Peer Recovery Program.
Yeah.
And when I go to that program, for instance, that's a secular program. It's just a day program for people that are instead of being out in the streets, they're actually going into a nice place where they can have food, where they can stay in there until 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Okay. And then maybe after that, they'll go to the shelter or they'll go to their home. But it's a safe haven for them to stay in. Mm-hmm. And when I go over there to run the meeting, I bring that peace. And you know what they tell me? Mm-hmm. They say that a lot of them testify to me. They say, I like your group because it brings that faith component to it.
Wow.
And you give us hope.
Hmm.
Okay. So I think that peace is very important. And I always tell them this is not a religious group.
Yeah.
But we do believe in this group
that
Christ is the center for your recovery.
Hmm.
And with him, you can do this.
I love that. I love that. Like, even in situations where it may not be overtly spiritual, like you said, like, I think that's what I love that you said. You still carry that peace.
Yeah.
And that peace, like, changes the environment. It changes people's options. It, like, allows them to know that this may not be a spiritual group on the Monday mornings or whatever, but God's still here.
Yes.
That's awesome. I do love that.
It's not a Bible group. It's not a preaching. We do talk about the Word of God. And I actually let it happen. Like, when I go to New Beginnings, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different environment because we have people there that are newer in recovery,
yeah.
that are struggling in their recovery, that are starting, they're starters.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, when I compare it to my night group, it's people that have been there more steady,
yeah.
and some of them are already serving God for different years. Like my brother, for instance, you know, he's going on his 12 years of his recovery,
mm-hmm.
and he's been serving the Lord ever since he started his recovery.
Wow.
So he's steady, and we, just like him, we have someone that's been there for 15 years, someone that's been there, you know, for 10 years and 6 years, and it varies.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So how do people typically get referred to your group?
It's funny because when we started the group, we started the co-founder, which was Frank, myself, and my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, we were able to, by word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
we just kind of started inviting people.
Yeah.
It took us a while to raise our number from 3 to 6. And on a weekly basis, we now meet ranging between 13, 16 people.
That's awesome.
Every week. But now the word has gone out there.
Hmm.
For instance, we go to New Beginnings, so there's the people are already there, so I just have to pretty much arrive and run the group as I do normally.
Mm-hmm.
But out of there, sometimes they want to go to my the group and that I do in the church.
Right.
And I invite them over.
Mm-hmm.
But also we have made contact with, well, they have made contact. People have heard about it.
Hmm.
It's just word of mouth, really.
Awesome.
I know I have, Ryan, we have the diversion program. Probation has reached out. They refer people sometimes. It can be, you know, to the agency that I work for as well.
Mm-hmm.
I also run a support group over there, although it's not Christ-centric, just a regular support group.
Mm-hmm.
But through there as well, many times I give them the option because some people will say, well, you only offer this at 10 in the morning on Thursday, mm-hmm. which is the one I do at work.
Right.
But I work during the day, so I tell them there's another option. You can go at nighttime.
Mm.
So this is how sometimes I get them over there as well.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So just word of the mouth, but there are already a few agencies in the community that know about the group.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really gone out there, just made the announcement also to a few of the pastors in our city.
Right.
I think we need to do more of that. We need to do more outreach. I just think that we're just right now putting out, you know, dealing with all the logistics of the group,
mm-hmm.
because it has actually grown and I have a full-time job already aside from this.
Right.
So it does take a lot of work.
Hmm.
But, you know, my vision is to see it expand in other places and just be able to, in order for us to do that.
Yes.
It requires a lot of work.
Yes, it does. I remember I was telling Annalie one time, I was like just in my prayer time with God, and I honestly had this like really strong sense that like God was going to multiply your ministry and like your groups. Like it was meeting as one group, and now you also have like the youth component of your group as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just got this sense that the Lord was wanting to like multiply your group in many different cities and different areas and almost like chapters. And I was like really mm-hmm. excited about that. And I remember I couldn't wait to tell you about it. But like, I don't know, like seeing how God is like opening doors and helping you guys get your nonprofit status and you guys are just growing and continuing to minister to people. It's like seeing, you know, that being answered in these like seed forms, and it's awesome. So I like still believe in for that, and I think it's yet to
yes.
come.
I trust in it too, because I had someone, the Lord showed a vision to a sister in my church, I think about 10 or 12 years ago, that she saw me, and she said this to me, where she saw me going to different places and forming little small groups.
Yeah.
And then leaving them running and going to
that's awesome.
Other places. And then all of a sudden, I didn't really understand that what she was saying. I was like, what is she saying?
Hmm.
But then I think about 2 years ago,
yeah.
I began to believe in that. I was like, oh, this is what the Lord was telling me.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it crazy how like God just gives you confirmation? Because when we see it in one way, sometimes it doesn't make any sense. And then he just, like, gives it to us in very different people. And then you're just like, oh, now I get it. Now it lines up. Mm-hmm. Now it adds up. To me, it's just, like, shows that the Lord is doing awesome things in you guys' ministry. Another question I wanted to ask you. So in your recovery ministry, in Time for Change, most often you're working with a population of people who struggle with an addiction. What have been some difficulties you've experienced ministering to that population, and how do you work through those?
I would say the most difficult time is when that person is not ready for their recovery.
Hmm.
And many times they're referred to agencies,
mm-hmm.
or let's say probation or diversion or some other program refers them there, and they go there, and you see them doing so well because they're required to do well for that time frame. And then all of a sudden, when they go through the time period that they're supposed to stay there, when you see them, like, they stop going and they kind of get entertained in the fact that, well, I have to work, I have a family, I have some other things I need to do, and they get entertained and disconnected from the group. That's the word. And once they start getting disconnected, all of a sudden you find them around the streets, and you see that they have relapses at times. I think one of the most difficult moments for me was last year when we actually lost a person due to an overdose that used to attend the group.
Wow.
And I found him just 13 days before he passed. I found him in the street and I was talking to him and he said, I need to go back to the group. I know, but I'm doing well. I have a job. I have a management job. I'm just working. I need to ask for Thursdays off so I can go. Hmm. And I was expecting him to show up.
Yeah.
And when I got the call, it was that he was at the hospital dying. Mm-hmm. And that to me was really hard for me to digest.
Wow.
And to accept the fact that he had an overdose, knowing that he had a group of people that loved him, that were there, mm-hmm. willing to support him, you know. And I couldn't understand it, but what gave me comfort was I just said to myself, you know what, Anna, you were there every Thursday waiting for him.
Mm.
He knew how to contact you.
Yeah.
He knew people loved him and he could have reached out to them and he didn't.
Mm.
And that's all that I can say.
Yeah.
Because what gives me comfort is just one thing that I learned, and I learned this from my supervisor that I had in the past. She used to say to me, she said, Anna, if you make a difference in someone's life and you manage to have them in your group for 2 hours, that's 2 hours that they're staying alive.
Mm.
That's 2 hours that they're not using out in the streets.
Wow.
That's 2 hours that they're safe in there. So to me, that gives me satisfaction.
Mm.
Although it's difficult at times,
yeah.
There's a lot of things that I've learned to take as positives in my life. Mm. You can only do for them what they allow you to do.
That's so true.
There's only so much we can do ourselves.
That's so true. So I get the chance, and I've gotten the chance, thankfully, to help create some of your flyers and the pamphlets and the testimonial videos. And they're, like, really inspiring. I love, like, being able to hear the stories and rehear some of the stories. Can you just talk about maybe one or two, like, testimonies, without mentioning any names, from Time for Change?
Well, this one, well, we have the one that's one of my brothers that, mm-hmm. you know, he's been sober for a very long time now. And I know his testimony impacts me because as a family member, we were all affected.
Mm.
And I know a lot of his family was affected as well. But just seeing him restore his life and just build up on his family, build that relationship with his kids again. And just seeing how much he gives, like he gives so much to our local church, to my local church. At times I'm just like, wow, I'm not able to do that now, but here you are doing it.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's like he's getting so much trust, both from the family and also through the church. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now he even has keys to my local church, which is a big church.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, he just does so many things that in my mind, I never thought people would trust him with. Because I'll tell you one thing. There was a time in my life when I was hospitalized, Marquise.
Wow.
And I came home from the hospital that day. And I remember a pastor who's a friend of mine from Puerto Rico. She was here and she went with some flowers to take them to me at the hospital. And they told her she's been discharged. So she went to the house. She found my brother drinking outside.
Mm.
And he said, she's not here yet. She was looking for me. And so he said, were you here to give her something? And she said, no, that's okay, I'll come back. You know what? She had flowers in her hands. You know what she told me? I didn't trust to leave my flowers.
Wow.
I didn't trust him to leave the flowers for you. So I took them with me. And for me to hear that from someone, and then to see that now people have so much trust in him, that's huge.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So, and I mean, we have testimonies of people. I have somebody in my circle right now that he's writing a book actually on his about his past, and I think it's great. I think it's gonna make a huge impact in the lives of many.
Wow, that's amazing! Writing a book now, and I think I really love, you know, not just because this podcast is called Keys to the City. I really like what you said about, like, you know, your brother. He didn't have a lot of trust. People didn't trust him very much back then. But now he has the keys to the church.
Yes.
Like, look at that. That's so amazing. Like, how God restored that and, like, restored the keys back to him. Like, now he's able to not just access the church, but he's able to open the doors for anybody else who needs it.
Yes.
That's awesome. I love that. I love that. That's amazing. A sermon right there. That's so good. I love that. Wow. Man, and he's so awesome.
And, so funny. It's, you know what's amazing also? My brothers, because I have brothers and sisters that didn't trust him in the past, that when I tried getting him help, you know, they refused to.
Wow.
And they said he just wants to be like that, leave him alone and all that kind of stuff. Those are the first ones that have actually given him extra keys also to their homes.
Wow.
Because I have some brothers that have, you know, they'll have a house like in, back in my country.
Yep.
And when they travel, they hand them the key and they say, listen, go over there, pick up my mail and take the rent from the tenants and please take it to the bank and deposit it into the account. So when the mortgage company pulls it out, it's there. So they trust him that much now.
That's a lot of trust.
That's
a lot of trust. Not just keys, yes, but the bank account money. Goodness. That's a whole turnaround. I love that. So there are a lot of people out there, churches and individuals that, you know, would like to start a recovery ministry like Time for Change. What do you think it takes to kind of step into this type of ministry?
I think it just takes a will. It's a desire to be able to change the lives of others, I think. Because many times as a faith community, as people of faith, we're stuck inside the four walls, you know? And many times we blind ourselves to what is really happening in the community. We blind ourselves that this is reality, that the reality of it is that it's not just one person that's going through this sickness or this disease of addiction.
Yeah.
It's like we either have family members, and whoever doesn't have a close family member has a faraway family that's involved. Whoever doesn't have a wife has a husband, has an uncle, has an aunt, has a cousin, or a neighbor, you know? So I think as a church, we need to, like, really be real. I think, you know, and when you stop being real, because this is what the person in recovery needs.
Yes.
This is what they tell me. They tell me what I like about you is that you're real and that, you know, you're open. And they want that. They want you to be open with them.
Yes.
They want you to be honest with them. Because they are people that when they recover, when they go through this process of recovering, they're doing better and they're sober. They're great people. They're hardworking people. And they are people of good. They'll do good, you know, and do whatever is needed. So I think in order for someone to start doing this, you really have to love it. I think you really do.
Gotta have the heart.
Because a lot of people, like, even in church have asked me, like, why do you like to be around those people? I'm like, what do you mean those people?
Wow.
Those people are individuals just like you and I.
Yep.
They just the same way you need support, they need support, you know? So I think it's a matter of us understanding what really Jesus... I ask myself many times, Marquis, like, I wonder what Jesus would be working on if he was out here these days. I wonder what projects he'll be involved in. I wonder which corners he'll be turning on. I wonder which bridge he'll be going under. I wonder who he would be feeding. And I, you know... I ask those questions to myself, and I come back and think, you know what? I think if Jesus was here, he would be doing this too. He would be going out there trying to change a life, trying to keep somebody from overdosing, giving them support so they can restore the family, so their kids wouldn't be sick in school, so their kids won't follow the same example as their dad or their mom, right? I think he would be working on this.
Wow, that's awesome. I love that. So... like we said, you started Time for Change almost 7 years ago. Throughout that time, what do you think has been one of the biggest lessons you've learned?
Biggest lesson? That you just can't give up. I think there's been times in my life where I found this work to be so much. There was a time that I was going through a situation in my family, and I said to the Lord, you know what? I'm tired of helping all these people, and I can't even help my own. But then I remember, and God, you know, spoke to me again and shook me up and said, I've told you to take care of mine and I will take care of yours.
That's a good word.
So now he's telling me to take care of his people, which is those in need.
Right.
Those that need that word of encouragement. Those that are walking without hope. Those that are walking without faith, you know. Mm-hmm. And once I do that, then he's going to take care of my own. I said, oh.
I love that.
Sounds easy, you know. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was like a wake-up call for me. I was like, wait a minute. You can't give up on them. Because if you give up on them, who's going to do it? It doesn't matter who's not doing it to me. I think as long as I'm doing it, I'm just saying to God, you know what, Jesus, if you come, I want you to find me doing this. I don't want to get tired. I want to continue. I don't care how many the more we work, I just see more needs and more needs and more needs. And this is why one of my biggest goals is to be able to expand the group in different areas. Not only to be limited in Lawrence and one church or two churches, you know, but yet to be able to go in different places until this disease can actually be cured or disappear on us, right? Until we can train enough people, until we can give them the right tool, you know, give the people the right tool so that they can continue working with the rest of the society.
Yeah.
Because this is the idea to, you know, get those facilitators ready, get more people involved, family members that care, you know, so that they can do the work. Wow. Because it's through experience.
Oh, I love that. Well, you know I love your ministry, and I love being able to support it however I can. How, if there's anybody listening that would like to support your ministry in one way or another, or who has a heart also for recovery ministry, how could they support Time for Change?
Well, first of all, I want to publicly thank you because you have been of such help to the group. Just having, like, the design, I know your logo has become very famous out there in our city. Designing the cards, to designing the programs when I need you for the anniversary, that's been very, very helpful.
I'm happy to do it.
So, you know, right now although we've been running for 7 years, we're actually at the beginning stages of, like, structuring ourselves. We just recently, you know, registered with the IRS, and we're in the process of getting like a 501c3 as a short term goal. But as for now, I would just ask people to contact me through email, probably. And our email is timeforchangeministry@gmail.com. That's timeforchangeministry@gmail.com.
Awesome. So if you guys, if anybody listening would love to support Anna and her ministry with Time for Change, send them an email. However, you know, whether it's financial or in other ways, you know, they are definitely loving to partner with people who can help support and help them to expand. It's an awesome ministry. I really do love it. Really do believe God is doing great things through it. Anna, thank you so much for being here and taking the time to talk about Time for Change.
Thank you.
I think a lot of people will be able to benefit from hearing your story and from your experiences. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Marquise, for having me. And lastly, I'd like to say this is not the least important, because the most important thing that people can actually do and the way that they can support me is through prayer. So for those people that are actually listening, they can help support the ministry through prayer, because the people that are in that circle really need prayer. They need that extra prayer each and every day. I think that's what marks the difference in their lives.
Amen. Prayer is powerful. It does something. It changes. All right. Well, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you so much. And I love getting to talk to you about this. So thank you for joining us. Thank you, guys, and have a great day. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. God bless you. Take care. Bye. Hey, if you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to subscribe and give us a great rating. We really appreciate it if you enjoyed it. And don't forget to share with people that you think might be interested and could benefit from this podcast. Thank you, guys.